Pranams to all dear souls. Let us come together in order to achieve the highest states of realization so that we might know our oneness with the Infinite Lord, His saints and His sages, that we may know His bliss, His joy, His fun and laughter and all. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai. Reading from Papa Ram Dass, God is absolute joy. Joy is the aim of all beings and creatures on this earth. Of these, a human being alone can know the secret source from which joy of all kinds emanates. In fact, even the delight experienced through the senses has its roots in this hidden source, which we call God, who dwells within us. God is absolute joy, and from Him have projected all the principles of manifestation. Just as to know the seed is to know the tree, so also to know the root cause of the world manifestation, which is God, is to know the source of the manifestation. We therefore infer that the universe, being the expression of God, is made up of waves of joy. Isn't that wonderful? In a human being, every part of him, subtle or gross, is a concrete expression of eternal joy. Even the momentary pleasures and pains are ripples on the infinite ocean of joy. So everywhere there is nothing but the forms of joy, because everything is God, who is by joy. When the devotee has realized the full splendor of God and is surcharged with ecstasy and is merged in Him, he cannot contain himself. He dances, being seized with a rare rapture, his entire body thrilling with bliss. The very name and thought of God sets him ablaze, as it were, with this exalted experience. In this state, the line of demarcation that divides the devotee and his God disappears, and God reveals Himself as the devotee. Where the supreme joy is at play, there love rises in floods. Here all diversity and distinction dissolve into the supreme spirit that is the sole truth, and than whom there is none other. The experience of the devotee in this attainment does not admit of description, as language is utterly incapable of doing so. He who enjoys it alone knows what it is. India has presented to the world a galaxy of saints who have reached the heights of such divine ecstasy mentioned above. All of them are the veritable embodiments of devotion of the highest type. They have poured out the joy of their souls in their songs and teachings. Love is their theme and joy is their strain. He who has drunk the nectar which they yield has sweetened his life forever and ever. Sri Yukteswar echoes that in saying that ever new joy is God realization. And from a posting I sent out this morning, Mother's Laugh. Wednesday, January 31st, we mark the anniversary of Mother's Mahasamadhi. While it is certainly a solemn occasion to observe the time of Mother's consciously leaving the body, and we certainly recognize the tremendous contribution Mother has made to our lives, what stands out to me in this moment is Mother's sense of humor and fun, Mother's laugh. The streets of Mother's joy and wisdom often met at the intersection of laughter. Using humor in her work as God's minister, and purely in comical appreciation for the general human condition. On one occasion, Mother said, "As many of you who see me perhaps more than others do, you know that I have a tremendous sense of humor, and that I do a lot of wisecracking, and sometimes it gets a little out of control. This evening I was reading briefly out of the book called The Master Said, which told stories about incidents in my own guru's life. He said that when he was a boy, he used to laugh a lot, and that the saints he went to see just loved his laughter. I was thinking the other day that when I get up to the pearly gates, because I've laughed and joked so much and sometimes taken God along with me, that I might be in a little trouble with him. Either he is going to say, well, here's this terrible person that didn't hang her head in shame and think of all the sins she had committed and whatnot. Or he's going to say, well, here comes this individual who doesn't think she has to wear sackcloth and ashes all the time and starve the body and whatnot. And maybe he'll just welcome me into his arms. So this story reminded me of that. Master told about his going to all these saints and how they loved his laughter. But one saint said to him, you know, I understand your laughter. But sometimes when you laugh like that so wholeheartedly, you annoy the other devotees. And Master said to him, but it is God who laughs. And the saint said, yes, that is true. You may laugh if you wish. And Mother chuckles at that, so I take that. Mother, Master, and Papa all had tremendous sense of fun. They could laugh at themselves as well as the recurring absurdities of life. Sri Yukteswarji also had a wonderful, sometimes wry sense of humor. After Sri Yukteswar was recovering from a serious illness, Master wrote, when I ventured a few words of sympathy over his emaciated figure, my guru said gaily, it has its good points. I am able to now get into some small undershirts that I haven't worn in years. Listening to Master's jovial laugh, I remembered the words of St. Francis de Sales, a saint that is sad is a sad saint. From a talk Mother gave, it shows her way of using humor to make a salient point with everyday imagery. And she says, but you know, there are a lot of people who just love to borrow trouble. So I brought along a little recipe for misery. I thought I'd like to share it with you. If you'd like to take it down, if you have a pencil and paper, it calls for 1 cup of guilt, 1 cup of dwelling on the past, 1/2 cup of plain poor me, a pinch of sarcasm, 1 tablespoon of criticism, 1/4 cup of blaming on others. Blend it and let it set until the ego rises to double its size. Divide it in equal portions and bake in a hot oven of judgment. Mother concludes, I think that's beautiful. As we know, Jesus was a master storyteller who made his points while giving memorable images to his listeners. Mother could also use funny stories to a wonderful, even to a devastating effect, as she did in telling this story. When you have final God realization, you see one thing is like another to you. You cannot see any difference because there is God equally present everywhere. But our egos are so great, and we think that if we have accomplished a little something, that it is we who have done it. In truth, we have done nothing. It is God who has done it all. There was a very capable man, one day who was a good businessman. He had talked to a great number of people, and his talk had been extremely successful. He was lauded as a wonderful orator, and everybody said what a wonderful speech he had given. The praise that was given to him was beyond description. The next morning, he got up and he dressed. He was before the mirror shaving and combing his hair. When he really looked in the mirror, he said to his wife, how many great men do you really think there are in the world? His wife looked at him and she said, well, I don't know, but I can tell you one thing. There is one less than you think. I think that is a wonderful, wonderful story. While the path can be tough, keeping a sense of humor about our human condition helps ease us along the way. It makes us not take ourselves too seriously. and I can make a point to the other fellow in a way that may be of help, and do it with a laugh. You do not need to be a saint who goes around being sad, thinking that by doing so you are pleasing God, for that indeed would make you a sad saint. We love with love in our hearts. We strive to be more like our dear mother, delightful master, and joyous papa. We can clap our hands and ask, what's the fun? Somebody wrote this morning and said that this posting was a different view of Mother than they had normally gotten of her. It's somebody who had not known Mother when she was still in the body. And I was sorry for that. And I think that oftentimes, because much of our exposure, those of us who did not know Mother, is through her talks. And she describes that when she talks, God picks her up, and a tremendous power pours forth from her, and we are all the beneficiaries of that. But that side of Mother, that when you stood in line after the talk, and she stood there, and it was your turn, and she would smile at you, and she would give you a hug. Now, in those days, hugs were not all that common. I think she started the trend, actually. And after that, hugging became something that so many people did. For Mother, it was giving all of the love of God in her heart to that individual. And I feel the same way about it. It is a way of expressing all of that love of God, to give it all away. And then if you were to meet with Mother in a private moment, then you would see her sense of humor coming forward. Now she was everything. She could be all the highs and all the lows, and that I mean she could be extremely serious. She could be extremely powerful, and then she could be completely light, effervescent, a flow of mirth and joy, and everything in between. Mother was complete master of herself. And as a result, she could play any note on the scale of music of life. You know, I love to watch people who are truly masters of their craft. I used to take, when I was driving semi-truck, and I would take the truck into a certain mechanic, and I always asked for the same mechanic at this shop. And I would watch him, and he would diagnose the problem, and then he would go to his toolbox, and he would select all the tools, particular sizes of wrenches, and whatever it was that he is going to need. And in these large trucks, you can actually crawl right into the engine compartment. And he would go to work, and very rarely did he ever have to return to his toolbox in order to retrieve some tool that he needed. He had thought it through all the way before he even started. And it was wonderful to watch him, and it's wonderful to watch anybody who has really mastered their craft. And they're at ease with themselves. They're completely focused, and they're natural. And so when we are around a true spiritual master, they are not trying to be spiritual. They are not trying to create a certain atmosphere. They just simply are who they are. And if they're very indrawn, then they're very indrawn, and that's it. And if they are happy and effervescent, then they are like that as well. There's no predicting them. They're very childlike that in that way, that they're spontaneous. I thought I'd read to you. This is from a book on Ramakrishna, and it's about his wife in this particular case, reflecting on her life with the master. And she says, the master used to have great fun with the boys. Swami Vivekananda, and Baba Ram, later Swami Premananda, would roll on the ground with side-splitting laughter. Once while living, you know, you just don't think about Swami Vivekananda. I wrote about him earlier and what a tremendously powerful individual. And it's interesting to think of him being a 19, 20-year-old boy rolling on the ground with laughter. So anyway, to proceed. Once while we were living in the Kasapur Garden house, I was climbing the steps carrying a bowl of milk when I felt giddy and fell. All the milk was spilled and my heel was dislocated. Naran and Baburam came running and took care of me. There was a great inflammation of the foot. The master heard of the accident and he said to Baburam, "Well, Baburam, it is a nice mess I'm in now. Who will cook my food? Who will feed me now?" He was ill then with cancer in the throat and lived only on farina pudding. I used to make it and feed him in his room in the upper story of the house. I had a ring in my nose then. The master touched his nose and made a sign of the ring by making a circle with his finger in order to indicate me. Then he said, "Baburam, can you put her in a basket and carry her on your shoulder to this room?" Naran and Baburam were convulsed in side-splitting laughter. Thus he used to cut jokes with them. After 3 days, the swelling subsided. Then they helped me go upstairs with his meals. Golop Ma made the pudding during these 3 days, and Naran fed him. And so we see that masters are completely natural. They're in their own element. It is the ego that thinks that it has to be holy. I remember watching somebody at the ashram, and they would always ensure that they were the last person in line for the flower ceremony. And they would actually make kind of a big deal about it. If somebody came in later, they would make sure to stand aside and push the other person forward so that they could be last. And I understand that this individual was trying to be humble. But actually, it took a great deal of ego and mind and will. Rather than just falling in line where God would have you and coming up, and then taking the flowers and taking it to Papa, Mataji's, Swamiji's sites, there was so much effort expended in trying to be humble. Humility, as Mother teaches us, is being focused and surrendered completely upon God. This is the truth. And when you are that way, then God may act in many different ways through you. And you were completely surrendered to Him. God took me through many experiences through the mystical crucifixion. And there were times when I was in public and He would take me over as a magnetic force is the best way to describe it. And it would take over my whole body. It would make me turn in this direction and do this. And sometimes, as I say, in public places. Now, I was not somebody who liked to draw attention to myself, so this was a great moment of surrender to me, to allow Him to take me over and to operate through me. And interestingly enough, no one ever approached me and asked me what I was doing or if I needed help or anything like that when I was in these experiences. Once I had entered into a store with a friend, and they had gone up to an upper level, and I was down in another section, and eventually I wanted to join them. But I didn't know where they were. About that time, this tremendous magnetic force took me over. It made me turn around and around in a single spot. And then it took me towards some escalators and put me on the escalators. And up I went, one floor, two floors. I went to the top. It took me to a certain place, turned me around, took me further. It's a very complicated pattern. And finally, I arrived at a certain spot, and it planted me right there. And just at that time, the individual I had come with came out of a dressing room, and there they were. And so I knew that this was an intelligent force that was activating through me. And many times this happened to me. Now, this is God's sense of fun. Sometimes God's sense of fun isn't what we think is fun. But His expression in this world is always joyful. That is Ananda. That is the very source of this creation. Now, we don't see that oftentimes. We got lost in the mire of all the things that we have to do, all the rules that we have to follow. Mother, let us know that when you rise up and you ultimately gain total and complete God realization, then there is no ego, and so there can be no rules that you observe at that point. Now, there have been times in the past when different spiritual masters, or so-called masters, have abused this principle, and they've made excuses for bad behavior, saying that they were above the law. But this is no joke, and it's nothing to mess with. And they will have to pay a very heavy karma. It was Jesus who said that those who said that they were doing the will of God and did not do it, that there was no forgiveness for them. Now, I don't think in that sense that everyone is ultimately forgiven, but that there is a heavy, heavy price that has to be paid when you misrepresent yourself as being God's servant and His, whatever it is that He's made you. And so we have to be very, very careful in knowing who we are and what we are about. And are we really following God's will, or are we following a whim or just a desire? I have heard people say that God has told them to do this and that and the other thing. And God has let me know that it is not through the deepened spiritual work, but they are identifying a whim that they had and took it as God's direction. We must do the work. We must go deep inside. We must know when it is God who is guiding us. And even then, we need to test every spirit. And so this is the way to self-mastery. But with self-mastery comes freedom. With freedom comes joy. With joy comes a self-assurance that we know that we are God's and God is ours. And that whether we live in a body or not, whether we are doing some function out in public or whether we are doing it in private, we are always with Him. There is not a thought. There is not one action, there is not one word that escapes His attention. But when we are His and He is ours, then it is all the joy. It is all the Ananda, it is all the bliss. It is all His expression, His intelligence. There really is no greater life, and this is what Mother came to tell us. When Mother went to India in 1954, she went there with the idea that she was going to get her complete realization. She felt that she had already been through most of the experiences. She had no idea what she was going to be put through. But when she met Papa, it was a moment of transformation. We had put together a booklet of Mother's for her Maha Samadhi. And since Larry and Kate and Jill were all in Anandashram, we thought that it would be nice to have different letters that Mother and Papa had written to each other. And this is a letter that Mother wrote. She was living at 7057 19th Avenue Northeast in Seattle at the time. And we've driven by that house. Mother didn't live there after she had left for India. They sold the house. They sold everything that they had. But this is after Papa had come, and Mother is writing up a letter of the impact that he had on her. Blessed Papa, how can I find the words to express the great love of God I feel for you? Ever since your coming, I've been filled with ecstasy, It is though I am swimming in a sea of His infinite bliss. I sat at Your holy feet asking the Perfect One to take complete possession of this body temple. I realized that He was before me in the form of the beloved Papa. How clever He is to change the name of God, the Father, to the gentle, loving, wise Papa, so that His children will not be afraid and can come closer to Him. I can only say again and again, as I did when God gave me the tremendous revelation about which I told you, why I, O Lord, why should I, who am less than nothing, be so greatly blessed? Again, He has come to me to verify that I am the Divine Mother in human form, come to protect the universal teachings of Christ, so that all paths may converge into one road of truth and light which will lead us to the castle of His presence. Your coming was the fulfillment of His promise. You have told me that that which God revealed to me was true, and You have promised that the Divine Mother will take complete possession of this temple soon. How can I say which way she should come? With a rod, the lightning of God, or in love and in the spirit of meekness? I ask You, what is her will? I want the fire and the wisdom of her life, so that all may see the flame of her glory. And I want her love and spirit of meekness to flow gently to all thirsty souls. Will You tell her that I can no longer live in separation from her? I kneel at her feet, and I offer You my love on the altar of my devotion. May I have Your continuous blessing. Your humble servant in God and Guru, Yogacharya Mildred Hamilton. Isn't that lovely? And this is up on the website now, so you can go to What's New and section. And Larry has posted this up there. And there are many letters in there, and they're wonderful. And they show the evolution of Mother's soul as she's going from the human to the divine. In this time, she was in that state of ecstasy. She is in that state of bliss. And when she went to Anandashram, that continued for some time. And then she went into the mystical crucifixion. And as hard and as difficult as that was, those 16 years that she went through these experiences, she came out on top. She came out with her full and complete God realization. This is not a common thing in this world today, but she attained that. And as a result, she is the way shower. She shows us the way that we may proceed. And that she did it with all of her humanness as well as her divinity. She broke the mold in many ways. Mother ate animal protein. She had this wonderful sense of humor. She was married and had children. She was a Westerner. She was a woman. She was all of these things. And yet, she walked with the great ones. She expressed the wisdom of all the ages. And she did it many times, even as we read about, where she makes a recipe up of all the things that the ego loves to do to confound itself. And to put it in the oven and let it rise until the ego has doubled its size. And in all of these delightful terms, she's telling us, this is what the ego does. Do not follow that way. Follow the way of love. You know, the bhakti is really the easiest way, and in most cases, the most efficient way. There are very few who are bred just simply to go the way of the yoni, of the discrimination. Why is bhakti so wonderful? It is because it is filled with joy. It's filled with love. You build a positive picture in your mind. We start with an image because the mind works with images. If we just think of God as a blank, It really doesn't give the mind something to focus on. Now, I've never been one who has thought of God in terms of images so much, but it was that feeling of presence that I felt when He was with me. And I knew that that divine presence was something so much greater than myself, so much more beautiful, so much more powerful, wise, and intelligent. And that is what I focused my mind upon. That is what I wanted more and more. Some people are especially inspired by a divine mother, or a heavenly father, or by Jesus, or by Krishna, or by many of the others. Now, Krishna and Jesus have always held a special place in my heart. The Bhagavad Gita and the New Testament have been more of a focus in terms of scriptures. I also love the Ramayana. And there are many other stories and scriptures that are very, very inspiring, uplifting, transforming. We take the power of each one of these. We focus our minds upon them. We can take a divine incarnation. You can think of Mother and think of how she spoke, how she presented herself, even how she walked, how she talked. Just conjure it up in your mind. And when you do that, you begin to enter into her consciousness. You touch the hem of her robe and you feel the quality of the fabric of her being. And as a result of that, you begin to not be her, but you be the God inside of you, that God intended you to be. But Mother is a touchstone, or if it is Master, or if it is any of the great spiritual beings or saints, that we can benefit from them. I remember going to Ramakrishna's Balur Math. Now, he never saw that. It was a piece of property that Vivekananda and others purchased after the great master's passing. He lived his entire life at Dakshineshwar. But this is just across the river and down the river a bit from Dakshineshwar. And they built a beautiful, beautiful temple, very large there. And you enter in and it's all marble floor. It's beautifully designed. Very, very high ceilings. And you go in, as I did, and I sat on the floor. And as I sat on this cool marble floor, it felt good because it was warm outside. And there were perhaps 30 or 40 people surrounding me. And I looked at this statue of Ramakrishna. He's in the seated position. His mouth was slightly opened. He was in a state of joy, of ecstasy. And so I looked on that, and soon my eyes closed, and in my inner vision, I saw the Master. And for some reason, I laid my head down on his lap, and he accepted that. And then I went into an ecstasy that went beyond all form, all image. And I merged into an absolute state of oneness with God. You see, this is what images can do for us. Things come to us like that. But they are not meant to be a one thing only, that you go to Mother and you worship her as God, so to speak. But rather, you see God blazing inside of her. You let your mind merge into that blazing light of being. You allow yourself to merge and you go past the form. And you enter into the formless spirit that Mother herself had so identified herself with. As Mother said, that it was the salt doll. And Ramakrishna told that story originally. And that the salt doll is a doll made out of hardened salt, covered probably with some clothing. And the salt doll was curious about the ocean. So it decided to enter into the ocean to explore it. And naturally, because it was made out of salt, it dissolved into the sea. And this is what happens when your consciousness, you think you're interested in God. You want to know God. You want to love Him. You want to serve Him. You want Him with everything in your heart, mind, and soul. And so you merge into God. And because you are made up of the same substance that God is, you dissolve into God. And you merge into an unending sea of bliss. You feel that there are no limits, no boundaries. It is an endless ocean. And it is full of life, intelligence, of the everythingness that God is. It is beyond description, beyond anything that you can conceive in the human sense, because all thoughts are predicated upon subject and object, but in God consciousness you lose subject and object. The two merge and become one. Mother then said that she had been that salt doll, and that when the ocean was pleased with her worship, her devotion, her merging into him, it took that salt doll, it recreated it, and laid it at the shores once again. And that the doll had come to tell all the world that God is life and life is God. Now, in our living our daily lives, we live many different aspects. Perhaps we go to work every day. Perhaps we have children. Perhaps we are looking for someone to date and perhaps marry. There are so many different elements. We have friends. Some of them are spiritual. Some of them perhaps not formally so, but good hearts and good souls. And so we ourselves are many different people through the day. And it is all God's fun. It is all his joy. And when you are keeping your mind on him and him only, then you feel that sense of fun. You feel that sense of joy. Papa is such a wonderful exponent of this. Reading his materials in his quest of God and in the vision of God, you get caught up in his spirit where he sees everything as God. Everything. Whatever form it takes. He's standing in a train station because they've been told to get off the train. They are riding without tickets. They're sadhus. And this is what they do. And there is a man with a lantern, and he's showing it into each one of their faces. And he's berating some of the different sadhus. And one fellow he takes, and he starts banging and shaking his head. And Papa looks at this sadhu, and he sees that he's smiling while this man is berating him. Well, Papa tries to nudge him away. He wants to get in on the fun. He too wants to be the recipient of what this man is dishing out. That stands the world on its head, does it not? We think so often that we're being abused, that we're being picked on. You think of Jesus being hauled in before Pontius Pilate. And you think, my goodness, that would be a difficult experience to go through. Just put yourself into his shoes. And then he's firing questions at Jesus. And some of them Jesus answers, and some of them he doesn't bother to. Pontius Pilate is not used to this. He's used to people quaking in their boots coming before him. He's a powerful man. He has absolute rule. He can decide whether you are to be tortured, whether you are to be released, whether you are to be put to death. And so he puts it to Jesus because he sees his inner assurance. He sees his seemingly nonchalance about the situation. Do you not realize I have the power of life and death over you? Now just put yourself into his shoes. And he hears that, and what does Jesus say? You would have no power over me were it not given to you from above. Now he was not talking about Caesar giving Pontius Pilate his credentials. He is talking about that one who is above us all, that many of us can stand on trial. But it is God, and God alone, who has put us there. It is God who decides what the results will be. And when we are busy tuning ourselves in with God, not worrying about what the results are going to be, only focused on being one with Him. And then we accept whatever He gives us as being right and just in God's eyes. It may not be from a human standpoint. You think of these people who have been falsely accused and convicted and put into prison for many, many years. And then through some new DNA evidence or other such thing, they are found to be not guilty. And they are released. How do you give back somebody 15, 16, 20 years of their life that they spent in prison? How do you give forgiveness if you are that one who has been so unjustly treated? And yet we know that because there is the law of karma, that if we had on some level not needed that test and that burden, that it would not have occurred to us. You think of someone who's on an airline flight, and all the other people are killed, but one or two live. How are they selected? Why them? And you see that there is a higher law at work here. And this inner assurance, this inner knowing that God is behind it all, that there are no mistakes, gives you an inner sense of ease. You can look at things and you can see them with a sense of humor then. And you say, well, God, you have put us in quite a fix here. What are you going to do about it? And then you listen to Him. He is your friend of friends. And He will talk to you. He will prompt you. He will be that living presence with you. And you will see that this world has gone on and on and on for so many years. There have been so many trials. There have been so many persecutions. There have been so many things that have happened to so many people. And it just seems to keep happening and happening and happening. And all of a sudden you smile because you see that the underlying reality is that God is in control of it all. And that He is trying to bring us to that awareness. He is trying to shake our clinging to this earth and the things of the earth and the things of this body and of the senses. That when He takes us into these tough experiences, He is doing it for our benefit. And then you take it that way. And then you feel, I don't know why this is happening to me. I don't know what the outcome is. But I know God is in charge of it, in the beginning, in the middle, and the end. And then you can smile and you say, God, how are you going to take care of this? What are you going to do about this? I am your servant. I am your slave. The great Swami Ramatirtha had gone to his guru, sent by his father. Now, his father's idea of sending him to a guru was not to make him a spiritual disciple. His father wanted him to learn how to read, how to write, geography, all the things that a guru could teach. But Ramatirtha got so much more than that. He got inspired, he got inflamed to know God alone. And so his father wrote to the guru. He said, send my son back. And Ramatirtha wrote back, and he said, your son has been sold as a slave to God. And this is the way that it was. And so when you sell yourself as a slave to God, then He takes ownership of you. He takes control of you and your life. And you accept that. And in full faith and love and service, you let Him mold you. You let the events of your life mold you. You accept everything as coming from Him and coming to you with love. Even if it is a tough caress, it is still God who is caressing you. So you see, we find the joy in life. God told me something interesting this morning when thinking on this topic. And he said, humor comes from the mind, but joy, bliss, comes from me. And when you think about it, so much of humor today is we see somebody in an act fall down or do something to themselves that's painful, actually. And we laugh in response. We all do it when it's done as a comedic thing. And you think how strange that is, that some painful event produces laughter in us. And it's true. It's true. And it is the mind who thinks of these things as being funny. But God is bliss. He is joy, unalloyed. And he is the author of that. And you find that come bubbling up inside of you. It is a mirth. It is a love. It is a joy. It is light. It is the everythingness of what God is. And you feel that deeply. But it's different than how the world laughs. Sometimes you hear people laughing so loud, and oftentimes it's accompanied by alcohol. And they seem to laugh at everything and anything. It doesn't take anything to make them laugh. And then you think of sitting in the silence of your own soul, and you feel God's mirth, you feel his joy, you feel his bliss welling up inside of you. And perhaps like the Buddha, you have a slight smile on your face. And that's it. But it's as big as the ocean. It's as big as this universe. There is no end to it. There's no limit to it. And that you may have with you always. So when we remember Mother, let us also remember her laugh, her joy at life, her love of life. She's not somebody who just said, put this world aside. Certainly, you have to become master of yourselves. There's no doubt. However, once discovering that the world is God, as Papa said, then you explore this world as God, unafraid, without limits or limitations, because God is inside of you and you are inside of him. And that makes all the difference. May Mother's blessings be upon you. May she so inspire you to lift up your heart, your mind, your soul, and be filled with God's presence, that it will transform you even as she was transformed. Hers are of the greatest blessings and the greatest compassion, for the Divine Mother was in her and she in the Divine Mother, and they were one. As Papa confirmed to her, as God inside of her confirmed. Pranams, I bow to Mother within you. That reminds me of that experience that I had with Mother when I was going to university. And I felt all of the barriers that had been around me, that were self-imposed, they all dropped, they all disappeared. And then I saw Mother's image on the chest of every person that I met. And it lasted for some hour or so, I think. Time always gets a little sketchy with these kinds of experiences. And then gradually, the barriers started coming back up against my own will. It had been her grace and her love who had given me that experience to show me what may be but to see and feel Mother in each and every person. To not deny the Christ by saying he is in this one but not that one. For it is the firstborn of every creature. Jai Guru, Jai Mother, victory to Guru, victory to Mother. Om Amen.